And back with another edition of Tony Talk right here on Scoops with DannyMac.com, our weekly conversations with the Hall of Fame manager presented by our good friends at Marie de Villa Senior Living, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, Be the Match, and of course, Triad Bank. And Tony, a lot of great baseball topics to dig into this week. And Bob Nightingale at USA Today got a lot of people talking about the state of the game. Goose Gossage, Lou Piniella, who are no longer in the game, sort of critical of what's taking place. Joe Maddon, who's still in the game. And is it too dramatic to say that baseball's at a crossroads? A lot of the talk is about all the strikeouts and the games are too long. Is crossroads too strong?
I think it's a perfect time, you know, like a perfect storm, that the conversations need to be happening. And I think it can be at all levels. I mean, definitely fans should be involved. Organizations all the way from amateur scouting right through player development into baseball operations and up into ownership, marketing, anybody in the organization. Because if the game is not exciting and entertaining, then you know that's our product. Then the game is going to suffer. And then obviously it should go, you know, the Player Association and Major League Baseball, I mean, they should be united on this, that whatever makes the game exciting and entertaining is good for both sides. So right now, I do think if you, a simple way to look at it, Martin, if you think about the game at its most exciting, and then you look at the game that you're seeing on a nightly basis most of the time, you'll see things that are missing. And that is the ball being put in play so that you see the, you know, these great athletes making defensive plays or making base running, taking extra bases. So there's a lot of stuff that's really great about our game when the ball is in play, and the fact that there is such an emphasis on swinging from your heels or your butt three times and always looking for a crooked number is not the most entertaining type of baseball.
Yeah, and I think Joe Maddon said it's the way that hitting is being taught, and I mean, I guess that goes to all levels. He didn't go online now and watch the videos. They're teaching these kids to swing that way. I mean, I would think baseball – I'm thinking that it's the players who say, God, I want to hit a home run every time. I guess I'm surprised to think that it's being taught that way. How do you see that? Is it more of the players' desire to hit lots of home runs?
Well, you know, I guess, you know, they're always very careful with this. There's a lot of really good stuff that metrics produces, but, you know, they also really disrespect a really good at-bat where you put the ball in play. And you look at situations that win games where they were winning runs at third base with nobody out. And three guys strike out. I mean, is that good baseball? No, that's not good baseball. But if they're up there thinking that they got to launch something, then you don't put the ball in play. So I do think that at the professional level, you know, we are, you know, we had this onslaught of metrics and what they can provide us. And I think there's going to be a balance coming back to where you use it for what it provides. And you also take the traditional side of the game. And, you know, the one thing I think Joe does a really good job at. You know, I've heard other managers talk, well, I can't do anything. Well, I think myself, wait a minute, you can't do anything. First of all, you can put on a play, and then you practice that play. You can put on a hit and run. You can steal a base. I think you need some strength with your front office, because a lot of front offices are telling guys that, you know, you can't manufacture, you just swing. So I do believe that that's a part of the game that has to come back if the game is going to move quickly and if people are going to see all the great things that a baseball game and baseball players can do.
And after a while, a home run, which is special, I mean, it loses value, doesn't it, if everybody's hitting home runs?
Well, the only thing is, they're hitting home runs and they're striking out. So what, you know, what's, you know, where is the, and the thing is, if right now there's an emphasis on getting the ball up in the strike zone. Well, if you get the ball up in the strike zone located perfectly, you know, it's a tough pitch to hit out if you've got enough action or velocity. But if you get it up there as a matter of practice and you don't have that command or stuff, that ball gets launched. So it really is not good winning pitching either. It's down in movement, then you go up and you go in and you go out. So there's a lot of what has been traditionally very sound that needs to be incorporated with some of the statistics that show, hey, this is what you should feature. And I think that, you know, that balance will be coming.
When they lowered the mound, you know, 50 years ago, was that highly controversial? Do you remember the pushback there where, like, oh, this is going to ruin the game? How How big a deal was that at the time?
Well, you know, I was just, you know, in high school or about to go to high school. I mean, you know, in the 50s when they did that, you know, and pitching was so overwhelming. And you know, so then they made a change trying to add more offense. Well, now, you know, they're adding, they've done a lot to improve the offense, just like protecting the quarterback. So you get that kind of game. But what's intruded with adding offense is that it's really become hitters think if they don't hit home runs, they can't play, they don't make money. And if it should be, you know, what does it take to win a game? And if you get a pitch that you can hit out, hit it out. But the other thing that you mentioned at the beginning is really one of the things, it's really a kind of a burr in the saddle of baseball, and that is there are a lot of well-intentioned hitting instructors that are reading and watching video and putting their slant on it that are really not teaching what it is to be a productive hitter in the major leagues. You look at major league hitters that are really productive for an average and home runs, they're not doing those techniques that these gurus are teaching their kids, and the kids are suffering because of it.
All right, another topic, pitch count, no hitter. Interesting situation develops in St. Louis. Dakota Hudson, young guy. He's at 6 2/3 innings, no hit ball. It's a 3-0 Cardinal lead, gives up a walk. He's at 111 pitches. Mike Shildt takes him out. I think it's the right call. It's only the 7th inning. But how tough is it as a manager? Because it's still, you know, zeros on the board. I think Hudson, the young guy, he said, hey, I don't know how many cracks I'm going to get at this. But my argument was, you're not going to let this guy go 140-plus pitches. So how tricky is that when it is a no-hitter on the board?
Well, you're always factoring, you know, what is the pitch count? That's just one thing that you consider. What inning is it? You know, sometimes you can throw 105 innings, you know, or you can throw 109. So more than anything, you're watching the kind of delivery he's got, how easy the ball coming, how many stressful situations does he face. If he's pitching no-hitter, there ain't a whole lot of them. But in the end, if you look at what it would have taken to pitch 9 innings, it would have been something like 140 pitches. And the manager, speaking for the fans, maybe they want to see a no-hitter that day, but if they thought they would, hey, you'll get him pitching no-hitter and then he's going to go into surgery and lose him for a couple of years, they would rather take care of the pitcher. I think that's the number one responsibility. I think Mike handled it properly. And I can remember late in his career, Johan Santana was going for a no-hitter. And Terry, the manager with the Mets, you know, knowing that he was late in his career, he went and, you know, let him go for it, and he got it. They might have been one of the first no-hitters in Mets history. But that was a guy, veteran at the end of his career that got – something special. And by the way, you know, he was never the same afterwards. So, you know, I just think the priority is, you know, keep the guy healthy so he can have a long pitching career.
Yeah. Is there a magic number on a pitch count, or is it always different depending on how the guy's throwing?
Well, that's a good question, because that's something that people toss around a lot, the pitch count. Pitch count is very variable. It is a factor. It's much more important to watch the guy pitch. You know, when a guy's delivery is really perfect and the ball's coming out of his hand, it's not as stressful. And he can throw 125 pitches. If a guy's a little herky-jerky and he's really forcing and it's really stressing his arm, he may throw 75 and be in a position where he hurts himself. So it really isn't – it's just most of the time, pitch count is a question of stamina and conditioning. And, you know, hey, this guy, if he's really healthy and throwing the ball well, he's going to be somewhere like 100, 110, 115. But then late in the season, when a guy gets tired, you know, that's what we had to do there in 2011. A lot of our guys, at about the 75 or 80 pitch mark, you could see the stuff start to back off. So it's just one thing you look at.
Well, we talk a lot about instant gratification or win now. I read quotes. Your boss, Dave Dombrowski in Boston, said, I'm a little surprised people are talking about my job. We did win the World Series last year. How crazy is that? I don't think there's any, I mean, I'm just saying that's probably fans or media barking about it, but shocking to me that your guy, Dombrowski, is even answering those questions.
In the last couple of weeks, I've been out, I go to Chicago for Harold Baines, and I've been out and around, not always with the Red Sox, and the fact that Dave, who's, here you go, I know you're going to like this, and tied for first with the most respected executive in Major League Baseball for a lot of years, including now. They're all, what's going on there? And, you know, I think, you know, it's just when you have the kind of year they had last year and they're struggling now, you know, there ain't no free lunch. You know, you're going to have a target on your back, and everybody is tainted by it. I mean, they're getting on some of the players. They're getting on Alex. They're getting some of the pitching coaches, the hitting coaches, and they're also getting on Dave. So I think it's just it comes with the territory, and if it bothers you, you got to do something else for a living. But Dave's record speaks for itself.
You know, I thought an interesting quote he said, you know, if you're looking back, he said maybe you look for guys, I guess, sprinkling in that are, quote, hungry to win, because when you've won, that is the challenge. You know what it's like to repeat. Maybe there is an element where you sprinkle a guy in who hasn't won before. I don't know. That's what I thought stood out, too, when he was saying, looking back, hungry to win. That's the challenge when you're trying to repeat.
Well, I think, you know, there isn't anything wrong with the roster that they had. It's just that human nature, and it's been proven year after year, sport after sport after sport. There's the celebration that goes on in your mind and with your fans, and it's reminded in the spring training. It is really difficult to put that celebration in the past and get back to zero as far as putting together all the fundamentals and all the intensity and attitudes about having to win games in April and for 6 months. It's a task. And, you know, and right now our record does not speak to, you know, the talent on our team. And our guys are, you know, they're trying hard, but, you know, you try to click it on, it doesn't work. But this happens over and over again. Probably the only guy ever here in our recent times that has it figured is Bill Belichick. But he's got a very strict policy about once a new season, the World Series or Super Bowl is over, you start at zero. And he's really stringent about going forward step by step.
Well, I know my day is complete. I got a tied for first out of Tony. His questions for Tony when we come back. Also, a little Redbird roulette right here on Tony Talk. Be the Match, a great organization, now a proud sponsor of Tony Talk, our weekly visits here with the Cardinals Hall of Fame manager. Be the Match has gotten a lot of attention of late because Layla, the Blues superfan, has gotten a lot of attention. And her story, you know what it is, needed a bone marrow transplant. Here's what takes place. Every 3 minutes in the United States, someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer. They turn to the family first, but 70% of the time, the family isn't a match. In the case of Layla Anderson, the super fan for the Blues, she needed a bone marrow transplant. They went to the registry. That's what Be the Match is all about. They have the donor registry. She got the call. Her family found out she had a match. She had a donor. It saves lives. Be the Match is really a community. It's donors, it's volunteers, it's healthcare professionals, it's researchers. You can get involved. BeTheMatch.org/give. You can make a donation so they can continue the great research they're doing, helping save lives. That's what Be the Match is all about. We appreciate them being a sponsor on Tony Talk.
Since 1960, serving the families of St. Louis, Marie Davila Senior Living. At the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road, the beautiful fountain greets you for the 22-acre campus. Full range of senior living. Independent living at the Villa Estate. Skilled nursing. Memory care. They have it all. Spacious dining room, salon, transportation around town, exercise and pool, private rooms, hands-on care. You're not a resident of Marie Davila. You are considered a guest. Fred and Mary Kay Weezahan and their sons live on site. It is family run, and it has that family feel. You've heard Tony and I talk about how this was home for the legendary Red Shandings for many years. He was also on the board and helped the original owners start Marie Davila back in 1960. MarieDavila.com. We suggest you go online and schedule a tour.
It's Tony La Russa for my friends at Victory Men's Health, where they can help you be you again. If you're dealing with low T, ED, or vitamin deficiencies, make sure to see my friends at Victory Men's Health. They now have two locations, O'Fallon, Illinois, and the new addition in Town and Country. Both offices feel more like a man cave than a clinic. So get yourself back in the game by setting up an appointment at victorymenshealth.com.
One of our great sponsors on Tony Talk, Triad Bank, the neighborhood-friendly bank located in Frontenac on Clayton Road. They're just west of Lindbergh. Real easy access off Highway 64. Get to Lindbergh and you are there. Founded in 2005, wide range of commercial and personal banking services. And how about this? They actually have people behind the counter, people there ready to greet you, ready to help you. Business owners looking to expand, talk to the bank based in St. Louis. Those decisions are being made here. How frustrating is that? You're trying to get a loan for your business, and the decision is made in New York or Los Angeles, not with Triad Bank. You can find out more at triadbanking.com. Home equity lines of credit, five-star rated bank, $360 million in assets. Check them out, triadbanking.com. Less than an hour from St. Louis, it's Greenville University. Founded in 1892, this liberal arts institution offers pre-med, offers online student involvement. Yeah, that's right. They'll get involved in local businesses, immersed in the community. A great little town of Greenville, Illinois, less than an hour from St. Louis if you're looking to get away for college, but maybe don't want to go too far. It's right up the road from St. Louis. Great professors, really a great experience. Kids involved in the athletics, but again, everybody is really immersed in what they're doing on the campus at all times. Greenville.edu for more information about this great institution.
Communicate with the show directly at TonyTalkQuestions@gmail.com. Loyal listener Dominic had questions. It's about the All-Star game, but just he had a couple of specific points. What was your highest priority there? Was it to win that game? Was it to play all the players? Was it to keep the home team player in there longer? Let's see. What changes could you make to the All-Star game break? Do you think they need a skills challenges perhaps? I guess this is another big picture tweaking certain things, but what was your All-Star approach?
I remember I used to go in, I think I managed, six of them. And one of my great joys is I love the All-Star game experience, whether I was a coach or as a manager, to see the game's greatest players there practicing and then playing is just a baseball fanatic's delight. I went in there and would always say, hey, look, why not go for the perfect situation? Why not get everybody involved, contributing, and let's win the game? And that's kind of the attitude that I had. But you always are aware of what would you regret later on if I sent a pitcher back to his club that I had overused. That would be unforgivable, and I would kick myself. If I did something with a position player that I knew was not in the team, his and the team's best interest. So fortunately, when you have that much talent on the roster, I think that you play the game. But, I had some notable examples. I remember my very first one in Anaheim, Chuck Finley, who ended up with the Cardinals in 2000, I think it was. He didn't pitch, and it was in Anaheim, and he was a guy that we saved for the extra innings. And from then on, every time, from 89 on, whenever the A's came into town, whenever I was introduced, they'd boo me because I didn't take care of the hometown guy. So you don't get a free lunch, but it's a great lunch to have because it's just a wonderful experience.
Another question was about your relationship with the media. They pointed out, they said, you seem to be friends with a lot of the media. Was it that way when you were here?
I always remember what Bill Veeck was one of the greatest about giving a young manager instruction. He says, look, the media has a job to do, just like you have a job to do, like I have a job to do. Respect the job that they have to do. And there are times that you're going to be emotional, you're going to be upset, you're going to be pointed out as not doing a good job. And if that bothers you, do something else. But always understand that they have a job to do, and I always tried to give respect. That's why I used to get really upset a time or two. I heard that I was arrogant, disrespectful. My parents would just take me to task if that was true. But if somebody kept trying to get something started or was overly critical of our team, I didn't have the greatest patience for that. And by and large, I think that understanding that they were working and they had a job to do, I think my relationship with the press was very good. And I enjoyed, especially the conversation sometimes or not when the microphones are on, where we're just talking baseball.
Yeah. And I would always tell people your ability to quote one of your lines, turn the page, was unprecedented because you might dislike a question or somebody's approach one day and the next day you literally started from scratch. I think it's healthier that way, isn't it? Just to do, for you to do your job and for the press to do their job.
I think it's the fairest, being fair to everybody. I also know that fans, we've talked about it, it's just impossible you know, you just go through 9 innings of a heated competition. Your emotions are ragged. You know, your brain is fried. And you only have 10 minutes tops before you have to walk in there. If you could do it like an hour afterwards, you know, then you'd be more collected and maybe you'd have more patience and you wouldn't, you smile a little bit more. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's possible. But, you know, just the 10 minutes afterwards is a really difficult challenge for anybody that's been in competition.
All right, time for a little Redbird roulette. Let's make it a two-for-one. Since we're talking no-hitters, the last two were on your watch. Hard to believe with this franchise. They haven't had a no-hitter since 2001. That was with Bud Smith. You also had one in 99 with Jose Jimenez. How about your recollections of those nights and also those two players?
Well, the one in 99 was, that was memorable because I believe it was Jose against Randy Johnson. And he was masterful. I mean, you know, he had the kind of arm where the ball was moving all over the place. He was very difficult to center. And it's just, if he could get the ball, keep the ball in the middle, it was hard to make good contact. It was a perfect night for him that way. Nothing was in the middle of the plate. They had a good offense. The score might have been 1-0. And one of the things that sort of reminds me all the time is, I believe, I may be wrong, that was career win number 1,500 where I passed him by one. Which was, you know, he always said, well, I took a no-hitter to get you to go by me. The Bud Smith one was, here again, you know, Bud was a real pitcher, you know, like a Maddox pitcher who had wonderful changes of speed, could spot his fastball, his breaking ball, his changeup. And I think, was it against San Diego? Is that who he had a no-hitter against? You know, and that was another case. And it just shows you how difficult it is because pitchers today, if they had the command where they got the ball to the four edges, you know, up and in, up and away, down and in, down and away, and kept changing speed, moving the ball in and out, messing with balance, messing with timing, and they didn't throw the ball down the middle. But it's such a difficult thing to do that you hardly ever see a no-hitter because you're going to miss over the middle of the plate and somebody's going to tattoo you.
Even more shocking, the last Cardinals no-hitter in St. Louis was 83 with Bob Forsch. I'll never forget. I was in high school. A friend calls last minute with tickets. His parents, I said, team, this is how great fan I was. Team was out of the pennant race. I said, I'll skip it. He threw a no-hitter that night. That's why you go to the ballpark, right? You never know what's going to happen.
The great Bob Forsch, man. What a great pitcher he was to the Cardinals.
Fun to talk about the Cardinal past and also some of the recent baseball hot topics with the Cardinal manager. It's presented by Marie Davila Senior Living, Greenville University, Victory Men's Health, Be the Match, and also our great friends at Triad Bank. Tony, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you.